Hello, my name's Kate Rolls and I'm interviewing you for the Wellcome Trust as you're taking part in Anthony Gormley's new artwork One and Other. The date today is the 16th of August 2009 and the time is 4:20 a.m. If I can please ask you to state your full name, your date of birth and where you come from.
My name's Peter Williams. My date of birth is May 18th, 1978 and I'm originally from Carmarthenshire, Wales.
How are you today, Peter?
Very well, yeah. I've suddenly got a kind of sense of euphoria. It's just slowly starting to sink in.
Brilliant. And what was it that motivated you to apply to be part of One Another?
My best friend, who's an artist, he's a printmaker, David, he mentioned the project to me. I've been a big fan of Anthony Gormley's work for years, but hadn't realised this was going on. It had just started up. So he encouraged me to apply, and I thought it would be an amazing opportunity to be part of one of Anthony Gormley's works, but also as a kind of an experience that you'd never normally have, particularly being able to take centre stage in a prompt location. And I've always thought just to have time to yourself and reflect.
Okay. So what are you going to do in the plinth today?
I'm doing two things. As I said, kind of having time to reflect. I live in London and find it quite overbearing sometimes. I quite like the kind of paradox of coming in the middle of Trafalgar Square for some peace and quiet, and being on your own and just actually having some time. So I'm actually finishing a book and writing a letter. I'm about to go away in 2 weeks to Vancouver. Leaving my partner behind, so I'm writing my partner a letter for whilst I'm away.
What's the book that you're writing?
I'm finishing reading a book.
Okay.
It's called Fatherland. It's a slightly strange book. It's about what would have become of Germany in Europe should the Third Reich not have failed. So it's by a British author whose name I can't remember, I thought I've been reading that for on and off for the past 2 months, so I thought it'd be a nice opportunity to finish it.
And the letter you're going to be writing, would you like to say a little bit about that?
It's really about, I thought I'd like to kind of crystallise my own experience on the plinth, not take photographs of it, not video it or anything like that myself, because they're the kind of things I do every day, but to just write about it and draw it in a personal way as a letter to my partner. Also, it's somebody I'm going to propose to when I get back from Vancouver. So it's just kind of a bit of an emotional kind of mind dump of a letter, really.
Yeah. And why are you going to Vancouver?
Partly for vacation, partly as a tour guide of a friend of mine, a very good friend of mine. He's retired, never been to Vancouver, would like to go. I used to live there. And so I'm going to show him around Vancouver. He doesn't have a partner, he doesn't have anybody who can take him. So I have to take him to see the city as a kind of an introduction to it. And he feels he'll never go to see it unless somebody takes him. He hates travelling. So I'm going as a bit of a minder, really.
And who is your friend that you're going to take?
His name's John. He's a retired teacher. Lives in London.
Would you like to say a little bit about yourself, about who you are? If I'll ask you that in the most open sense possible at the moment, and you can choose where you'd like to start with that. What springs to mind immediately when I ask who's that person on the plinth today?
I suppose like a lot of people at the moment, because of the situation that everybody's finding themselves in as the economy changes things. I'm an architect and I trained for 10 years and I enjoyed being an architect and doing what I was doing. And then everything hit and I took redundancy at the start of the year. So 2009's been slightly strange. So I started up my own design firm. And it's funny because you go through 10 years of education and 10 years of with architecture, I guess like a doctor or any other profession, you go through a long period of time of studying, and it's a bit like a treadmill. You've got each stage, you do that, you do that, you do that, and it starts to define who you are. And then suddenly when that's interrupted, it forces you, and it forced me after 10 years to think of what it is actually I really enjoy doing, and if I need to change that. So for the past couple of months, it's just been a process of trying to make ends meet and earn a living. Looking at kind of breaking what I'm doing and actually return much more to looking at other areas, art, landscape, land art, and actually forging a kind of new direction for myself. Looking at going to Boston with my partner, looking at moving there, probably next 2 to 3 months. An opportunity has come up, and if I'd have stayed in that treadmill and had the recession not happened, and had I not lost my job, I've probably never been forced to have rethought about what I'm doing, who I am. So 2000, that's a bit garbled, but 2009's been quite a roller coaster, kind of emotionally, and looking back at the past 10 years and thinking, my God, what have I actually done? And actually, I could do a lot more.
So moving forwards, for you now, what do you imagine is going to happen for you? That's a very awkward way of putting it. Have you? What's important for you in your direction now?
I'd always been, because I've been kind of professionally focused, I'd always been slightly selfish. I'd lost partners in the past because of work. And that's one thing I'm determined not to let happen again. And I've been together with my partner now for a year and a half. And that's made me, I used to be quite materialistic, and actually finding somebody that you cared more about than yourself forced that out of you, forced it out of me anyway. And kind of materialism's become a lot less important since that's happened. So actually concentrating less on myself and more on other people. When we do move, I'm looking at a couple of organisations to actually volunteer with in Boston, not only arts-based but community-based as well. So kind of going much more down that road than being so professionally focused, you shut out most other things, which I think is a symptom of being in London as well. I didn't grow up in London. But it's the kind of place that you study, you're told to go there, you're told that's where you need to go make it, and you get kind of sucked into a kind of slightly cloudy way of looking at things. So I'm quite looking forward to escaping the big smoke. Mm.
Yeah. Would you like to say a little bit about your upbringing?
Yeah, my parents live back in Wales. Actually, I was born in Pembrokeshire, in quite a small town. And when I was 10, my parents moved from Wales to Surrey, thus the slight lack of a Welsh accent. My dad's Welsh, my mum's English. I always had a fairly negative personal association with Wales. We were living in quite you'd say a nationalist town. I think things in the 80s, late 70s, 80s were very different from what they are now. My mother didn't enjoy being there. My parents, I was a Welsh-speaking school, it was incredibly difficult. So they made a decision to the detriment of my father's work to actually move to Surrey to bring up my brother and I. Which, you know, you grow up, you resent your parents for so many things, and then you kind of hit this wall when you turn 30 and think, God, I was a little shit when I was when I was younger, which I'm now incredibly thankful for them, for the opportunities they've given me, because they did a real kind of sacrifice to themselves. We lived in Surrey. My dad was a caretaker, earned very little money. Lived on site on the school. He had an incredibly hard job, They moved back to Wales 3 years ago, enjoy it. I go down occasionally, not often enough. Got one brother, Paul. I'm gay. My brother's also gay. He came out to me, let me think, 2.5, 3 years ago. And actually, that was kind of a shock as well. Actually, I haven't thought about these things for a while, but I came out when I was 17. It was quite tough because my father was incredibly shocked by it. He, at the time, I despised him for it, but of course now you know, you grow up, you realize that actually he didn't know anybody who was gay. He was the youngest of 12 children brought up in a Baptist family in a player, so he'd never met anybody who was gay. So he reacted against it out of fear and shock, and ironically, thanks to my mother, she brought him round. And ironically, now years later, my father's one of my best friends, and I actually get on better with him than I do with my mother. So it's funny how you never know how things turn out. My brother came out to me 2.5 years ago, and that was also a kind of marker in my life. I mean, it's funny, things have become incredibly PC. People always say, "Oh, do you want children? Like, you've got a partner?" But I don't want children. I know this is very conservative or traditional, but I think children really need a kind of a mother, father, if they can have that. If they can't have that, if you can have that, you're incredibly lucky. I wouldn't want children, but I'd always had the perception that I'd have nieces and nephews, and really loved the fact that I had a brother and he might get married, and I'd have nieces and nephews and have that connection to children within the family. It was really selfish when he came out as being gay. He came out when he was in his late 20s. I was 17, and I'd known myself a lot earlier, and I was kind of angry at him for not, A, coming out to me earlier, but B, for taking that away from me. So I don't know what that says about me or the way I know human beings think, because even though I'm not going to have children, it suddenly become the end of the family, and that was a strange period that kind of forced me to think about how I view other people and my own expectations of them. So of course it was incredibly unfair of me to think that way, but of course I've never said that. Yeah.
And how do you feel now about it?
Now I'm very happy with it. It's still something that I think of occasionally, especially when I didn't have a partner. My partner, he's got two brothers, both of which, one's just got married, the other one's getting married next summer, and so it's kind of, so they're going to have children, so I'll be the kind of the adopted uncle, which would be nice. But it's still something that I miss, the thought of it being the end of the family. And of course, I think about how my parents feel about that. They've been absolutely incredible, and utterly supportive of the both of us. And we're both in very solid relationships, my brother and I. So it's kind of blown all my father's preconceptions out the water. It's sometimes quite sad, but you kind of, you get over that.
And would you like to say anything about your partner?
Tony, it was quite funny actually talking about work and how you get quite selfish, because we actually met online. I'd had partners before, hadn't worked, but we met on a gay dating site, and it's one of these sites that's primarily used for sex, for finding sex easily. And I'd used it for that as well. But Tony had contacted me a year before we met. And for some reason, and now I really don't know what that reason was, we never met. We were talking on this thing for a year, whereas some guys you meet up with and you have sex with after maybe speaking for a week, and then you go out for a drink and then you go and have sex with them. But we didn't. We kept on talking. It was a whole year. He kept on trying to get to meet up. I was traveling abroad a lot with work. Work was always getting in the way. And then it was the 3rd of January last year. And of course, I had no work. I was off for a couple of days. He was also off at work. And we decided to meet. And it was a bit like a thunderbolt, because of course we'd spoken a lot by that point, but I didn't really know him. But as soon as we met, that was it, and I haven't seen another person since, and nor's he. We just instantly connected. So from that, things grew very quickly. His previous partners had never met his parents. I'd met his parents in about the first month and a half. We went up to Edinburgh, and he's probably the only person in my life I've really felt comfortable with, and that I can talk to him about anything, and seriously miss when he's not around. I moved in with him in May, and we've been living together since May. And yeah, we're even to the comment of his friends recently, we seem slightly joined at the hip. But he's just incredibly supportive of me as well, particularly since I stopped working and started my own company. Things have been very, very tough, and he's just been absolutely fantastic. So I'm very much in love with him. Which I haven't been before, really. You think I thought I had been, but it wasn't until this point I'd realised that wasn't the case. So and he's coming here later on as well, yeah. With another friend.
And how about your beliefs? Do you hold any beliefs?
I do. I was brought up a Catholic. My mum's Liverpool, from a Irish Liverpool family, so as you can imagine, Catholic with a slight personal take on things, kind of pick and choose. I was brought up in a Catholic family. We went to church regularly. I was an altar boy. And like all good Catholic boys, they always think they're going to be priests until the age of 10 or 11. And then they think, what the hell am I thinking? So brought up Catholic. And it's kind of funny. I went to a Catholic school, and it was always quite a big part of growing up. But then when I went to university, getting sucked into an artistic world, I always find artists or incredibly atheist. Or actually, and it's quite funny, the more and more I talk to people who are creative, they're very true to themselves. They try and express themselves through their work, all that goes with being creative and an artist. But the one thing that they often shy away from is talking about their beliefs, religion, and I think quite often they say what people want to hear, which is that they don't believe, or that they take a very kind of whatever opinion of religion. And I've became the same way, and I stopped going to church. It became less and less important in what I was doing. The gay thing was never an issue in connection with being Catholic, but it just became less and less important. And then the more friends I got outside of being at a Catholic school, the more people who were uninterested in religion, and you suddenly became quite disconnected from it. in the past, in the, I don't know if it becomes a nostalgia thing, slightly rambling now, but in the past couple of years I thought it would be nice to go back to church more often, have a better connection with it. But actually I don't know if it, I've got certain beliefs. I believe in God, maybe more humanist beliefs now, which are Christian, I guess, kind of you should treat people as you'd like to be treated, etc., etc., etc. That see church as kind of a more social thing, and I don't know, maybe it's that kind of human need to belong to something that you can't quite understand or explain. I don't know if I need that. Do I need that? Maybe I do. Maybe as I get older I will. Maybe when I hit 70 I'll be looking for it, and I'll forget about it for the next couple of years. Well, more than a couple of years. I'm not that old. Christian, sorry, that's rambling.
And how about politics? Do you have any personal politics or political persuasions?
Yes and no. Like most people, you don't know where politics are heading in this country at the moment. And my father, when I was younger, he never went down the mines. He was a machine driver for in a coal mine. He was always above ground, and he sent the men below ground on lifts. But I can always remember when I was little, my father coming out on strike, and in the 80s, he was a miner in Wales, and being brought up with a very laborist view of everything. And it wasn't until about 10 years ago when I met a very good friend of mine who's he wouldn't call himself politically aligned to anything, but he's phenomenally intelligent. He's quite analytical, and he'll look at both sides of the argument. He worked in Thatcher's government on education policy, but he always sees himself as a kind of crossbencher, and he kind of opened my eyes in looking at politics from a non-predetermined standpoint. So I know that sounds like a cop-out. Can you crossbench being a member of the public? But the way politics stands at the moment, I think it's incredibly beige, and there is nothing really at the moment that I feel I can hang my hat on. And I'd rather be... I always vote... I don't like the idea of not voting. I'd rather the box for the conscientious objector be sitting on the form than nothing at all. But I think that's kind of common at the moment. A lot of people feel that way.
And what about your other interests?
Other interests?
Yeah.
Apart from. Architecture. You tend to kind of live and breathe it when you're an architect. And in fact, we just came back from Tony and I just came back from a 1,500 mile trip around France, where he passed his motorcycle test a year ago. I've been riding a bike for yonks, and convinced him to go around France with me. His mother's French. They've got a house in South France, so we went to the South of France, picking up lots of buildings and sites along the way, which is great. So as a segue, motorcycling is a big positive for me. I've been riding for 10 years. It must be in the blood because my dad had bikes, his dad had bikes. I love motorcycling. I came on my motorcycle today, which is why I'm dressed head to toe in cow. So motorcycles, I probably wouldn't say this to anybody else, I don't know, I'm quite a sexual person. Sex is quite a big part of my life. I've never been a sex worker, but I wouldn't want to be, but just sex and kind of the niche of sex, so kind of leather sex, that is also a big part of the gay community, and historically, and a lot of going back to sex, coming kind of round to sex and outcomes of sex, lots of charity work with aid organisations and things like that. So sex, art, architecture, walking, and actually trying to find some solitude when you can get it. And really kind of spending time with friends as much as possible. And a lot of them I've met through sex, so strange to come back to that one again. Yeah.
It's great that you're so open about talking about that. Is that something that you, is it important to you to be open?
It is, although, of course, when you're a professional as well, it's kind of, you've got to have levels of where you're open. Mm. But generally, to people who really know me, I always find it funny in the Facebook world, everybody seems to have hundreds of friends, whereas I probably have 10. But I think what people call friends and who are really friends are probably quite different. Being open, but the way I dress sometimes, you can't help but be open. That is quite important to me. I think particularly when you've and maybe this is a gay thing, but when you grow up and you hide yourself so often from people and you try to fit their expectations, I think which is why there's so much flamboyance in the gay community, actually when you do lift that off you, when you've had that over you, when you've been an adolescent most of your life, when that comes off, then people are a lot more colourful and outrageous than me. I've seen some fantastic examples on the plinth. There's some fantastic things, but I always think that's a kind of a symptom of kind of the lid being on the pressure cooker for too long.
You said that you're an architect, and architecture is a big part of your life, but we haven't actually talked much about that.
Mm-hmm.
What would you like to say a little bit about architecture and your interest in it and having worked in the field?
It's actually, and this is quite funny for an architect to say this, but I find it increasingly more and more personal. Architecture, it was something that I wanted to do from when I was quite young, probably 13, 14, and it's a hobby for me, and then I realized I have to make money from it, because I've never had the ambition of making money from it, and I'm not, although I used to be quite materialistic, making money actually wasn't quite connected with that, which is probably why I got into so much debt. It's actually, architecture is something I tend to struggle with more and more, because it's become, I used to work in Holland, and that's where I started my career, and where architects and architecture was seen as a kind of a core social value, something that people treated their architects like doctors. They were seen as a daily thing in life, and architecture is seen as a kind of cornerstone to expressing yourself culturally, whereas I think in this country it's become devalued so much over the past 20, 30 years. It's becoming slightly less important and more disposable, especially you see how often buildings are ripped down and all the environmental consequences of doing that, rather than reusing them, changing them, adapting them, etc., etc. And kind of the icon edifice, you know, everybody wants an icon, which is a word I absolutely hate. And so it's become a commodity, it's become less and less about leaving a mark for the client or producing something beautiful. Actually, to try and produce something beautiful is becoming harder and harder. Like most things, things are becoming more and more economically driven, or actually driven by management rather than clients. So I used to design a lot of schools. I'm actually working on a school at the moment. And you don't design schools for children or teachers anymore. You design them for multinational consortiums that are paying money to them. The PFI process, again, that's political, but that's where I guess the two of them merge. So I'm finding architecture harder and harder. When I started up my own company, I'd wanted to do it for years because I felt that I could put something much more personal and meaningful into what I was doing, rather than doing something for designing a building for a user that would never use it, and he was going to deliver it and then walk off and leave the client at the end of the day with a bit of a mess. So working for myself, I could work with smaller clients, get the work that means more to me. But I found that not only because of the economic situation, which is making it incredibly hard, but also just to deliver a design and get paid for it is incredibly difficult, because I think people don't see architecture as having quite the same value, ironically, as art. People will pay for art, whereas people won't necessarily pay for architecture, which is quite an interesting kind of situation at the moment. So it's kind of pleasure and pain for me, architecture.
And coming back now to your current situation, where you're about to stand on the fourth imminently. What does that mean to you? What's your thinking about this whole thing?
I think the whole program is absolutely fantastic. I think it speaks volumes about Anthony Gormley. I'd seen interviews of him and always thought he was quite a kind of calm, kind of gentle man, quite a humanist, interested in people, and that there couldn't be a bigger expression of that than this. I think to give up your invitation to produce a work of art that's all about the artist over to people, I think is just phenomenal. For myself, it still hasn't quite sunk in that I'm going up there, but I suppose I hadn't thought too much about it. I've been working quite long hours recently, and it's kind of snuck up on me. But kind of being given the chance to reflect whilst I'm up there, and just get a completely different viewpoint of something that I walk through every week, I think it's quite exciting. I feel quite humble, because people have done fantastic, exciting things up there. But for me, it's more about the experience of the individual rather than creating a kind of spectacle. So, yeah.
Great. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.